and welcome to another episode of the Ultra Happy Podcast. I am your host, ultra runner and coach Tanya, and my magnificent co-host Andy,
otherwise known as the bag lifter. The suitcase lifter.
We are literally coming down from the plane. We landed at 11 and we are here after a couple of misunderstandings, but it's 4 p.m. and we are just like coming back from our trip to Dubai. So that was a quick trip. It was quite fun. It was weird to see it raining over there.
Yeah. Do you know what the funny thing is that when we were over there, we landed and it was pretty decent, wasn't it, the next day, and it was warm enough. But next day it started raining and people over there were raising their hands to the sky.
I know, they were
like,
dancing.
This is dancing in the rain, literally dancing in the rain because they're not used to it. Whereas we're looking at each other like, this is what we're trying to get away from.
And they're like, also because they are doing rain seeding. What is it?
Rain seeding.
Cloud seeding.
Yeah, so they're actually going to manufacture rain.
Is that? Yeah, they're going to manufacture rain. Yeah, that's the perfect way to say it. That was mind blowing.
They use sand as well to do that, which is a bit. I couldn't get my head around.
So wild, you were the bag lifter.
I was the bag lifter, and just so you know that it was 55 kilos I was carrying.
We carried 150 kilos in total of luggage out of our flat in Glasgow, all the way up to Dubai, and yeah, that required some heavy lifting.
You were pretending you had a sore back, so here's me.
Oh yeah, I'm so sore.
Oh, that's good timing, that.
But it was great to get there. If you follow me on Instagram, you've probably seen a couple of posts there. I posted a couple of videos. For people that were asking me like, why you guys are coming back and all that? Well, because we still have to take the dog and the other half of our stuff. So we're doing the moving in
two sections.
Moves.
But actually you were out running every day. You got a chance to run in the sand.
I was able to run a little bit in the sand. It was not like sand dunes. I just went to the beach and just kind of like practiced because I do not have obviously a car. And to get out to the sand dunes, you actually need to drive a little bit. So I wasn't able to do that. But I just found like the closest beach and I didn't bring my heavy backpack. So I just did, my normal run in the sand, which it was fine. And the good thing, it was not super, super hot either.
Yeah, but it's still warmer than here. It was kind of muggy.
Yeah, it was not as hot as would have liked to practice the proper heat training, but
remind me again how many, because we were walking literally half marathons every day. This was just walking.
A distance, you start walking and you can start walking miles. Even the mall, you walk for an entire day.
Because you'd done like a 2.5 hour run and then we walked for like a half marathon.
I pretty much walked, ran, and in the final day, like 35K the whole day. So you pretty much clocked like half marathons pretty much every day. Yep. And I clocked pretty much like over 30-ish K every day. So it was a great practice for just walking. Yep. Just my feet were so sore the next day and having to run over that feet, the sore feet. I'd say it was a good practice for what it's coming.
Yeah.
So it was great on that end. And then I decided one day that I was going to run to that beach. So it's like 10 kilometers, Kite Beach, from Dubai Marina. So it's like pretty much a straight road all the way, but there's nothing. There's just big like complexes of houses on the highway, but it's just flat, really straight and nothing around. So I was a bit fear like, oh God, I'm not going to have, if I drink all my water, there's no like shops around or toilet stops. No, nothing. There's nothing there. Well, and that happened. Kilometer 6. And I'm like, I think I need a toilet. I was like freaking out.
Ultra runners love to talk about a toilet.
I'm not going to make it. And like, there's nothing around. I start Googling, like, there was the closest restaurant. Because I was like, this is, where do I go? Like, I am so... So I had to like walk fast because I couldn't run anymore.
You're doing
like,
that fast
walk. Oh man, it was hell. I was starting to like sweat, like cold, because I was like, I'm not going to make... And obviously you cannot stop and do it behind a tree there, because I mean, I do not want to start that way. I think I would really get locked up.
Having said
by
that, you almost broke into some guy's house or some guy's compound, did you not? Remember?
We were because I seen a massive cage and the door was kind of slightly open. And I, trust me, it crossed my mind, like just saying, hey, can I just use your toilet really fast? And then I picked, not I picked in, but you can see like on top of the wall they had. And then I seen like massive cages. And then a sign that said tigers or like tiger
this
cage.
This is for ultra runners that need the toilet.
Tiger cage. Yeah, so that scared me a little bit. I was like, what if I go to the toilet and then I never come back? Yeah. And I just become food for the tigers. Yeah. So, yeah, I decided not to go that route. And just like, just hold it. I walked another like 3-4K and then the kite beach was there. Yeah. So I was able to obviously
To your credit, you were up every day getting out there doing 2 hours running as far as you could go without in the toilet.
So today we are, that was our quick life update.
Yeah,
we are
very
5 weeks, where's, pardon, sorry. Oh, pardon. What am I speaking Spanish?
Oh, I don't know. What heads are away?
We are 7 weeks away from the first desert and we have an amazing guest today. We have Samantha Fanchon, which is the director of Facing the Planet. So, she is,
Hi.
Hello. Oh, I was just right introducing you. How are you?
Yeah, good.
She has been with the organization, so Raising the Planet, since 2008. She's been in over 50 races. Can you believe that? 50 races.
Crazy, isn't it?
And yeah, I just wanted to pick your brains. I think if someone has seen it,
seen it all.
I don't know if you've done any race, but if you've seen it, that's the person that has been there in since 2008. How many years is that? 20? No, 17.
This is where we see Tanya's
maths.
Oh
no! Right, since 2008. So that's 50 races. You've seen a lot, experienced a lot. You've probably seen all the mistakes made. And yeah, so thank you so much for coming and spending a bit of time with us chatting about the race and about Raising the Planet.
Hi, Tanya. Nice to be here with you and excited to talk about your very first step in the desert.
Awesome. Oh my God. I'm so excited to meet you like in person. I feel like we've been emailing back and forth for a while and it's, you know, probably, it will be a great first time to meet you like in person.
In fact, in one of the earlier podcasts that we started about this journey that you're taking, we talked about the call. Remember the call that you were on with the Racing the Planet team?
And
I was saying, I always sit on the calls and listen to Tanya because I'm the one with the memory, so I remind her about things.
He keeps me straight.
I came off it thinking, this is brilliant. This is really organised. I can't wait to see how this happens.
I know. You guys are so well organised, and I do wanted to see or talk to you about that a little bit. If in my end, there is a lot of parts moving, you know, a lot of logistics. I cannot imagine on your end as well what does it take to organize or be the director of something like this?
Well, most importantly, it's better you don't know all the details.
That's a good introduction.
I like it. Surprise.
And the hope is that you won't understand any of the details. You'll just see the front end of it when the race happens.
I like that. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Absolutely right.
There is a lot that goes into the preparation, and it's more than a year's worth of preparation, but now it starts to get real with everything coming together and fitting together all the Tetris pieces, as we say, and making sure the races are ready and then everything's ready at our end. But yes, so it's an exciting time. So 2 months this week, two months today, you will have finished your first Racing the Planet Ultra Marathon. That's a scary thought for you.
Well, we actually haven't thought about it like that, but yeah, that's true.
No, I was trying to make maths there. If you see me, I was like, oh my God, you're right.
But that's also really exciting, isn't it, when you hear that? Yeah.
So obviously you've managed over 50 races, all of Racing the Planet, or you also have done other races?
No, all Racing the Planet, actually. So my previous life was completely different. And then I found out about Racing the Planet. And as you will find out, it's pretty addictive. So from there on, it's been Racing the Planet all the way.
Yeah.
I'm not putting my foot in like one tiptoe. Like I'm going full in.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've seen, I want to think that I'm not the only person that does this, right? Like in the sense of it's my first self-support experience and I am going all the way.
No, it's completely normal. Because if you're going to go all the way, doing one first almost seems like a wasted opportunity first off.
Right.
So if you're going to do it, go big.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I think. Yeah. I was like, if I'm going to do one, I'm later on I may regret, I should have done the whole four
or five.
You said
that from the start, didn't you?
So I was like, if I'm going to do one, I'm just going to do the five of them.
Yeah.
Sure. Speaking about that.
You've got the preparation, you've got the gear, you'll alter them a little bit as you go and learn as you go. But you do a year later, it's almost like you start again. Or if you do five years later.
Yeah, you need to train again, like all the way, like from zero to take on again. When here, I'm just pretty much preparing for one big block of five races. It's one preparation and that's it pretty much.
But it's a lot. Taking on the Grand Slam and the Grand Slam Plus as you are, I mean, less than 20 people in the world have ever done the Grand Slam Plus. So that sort of puts it
Oh, my God. You got me like the goosebumps just saying that.
Yeah, once you said that earlier on, and I remember when you were texting, that was Tanya hooked. Totally hooked. Because I think she wants to go down in the record books, you know.
Oh, yeah. They have like this website when you obviously seen how many people.
Yeah.
You guys can go on the website racingtheplanet.com and you can see obviously how many people have done what races, what years, how many people have finished the Grand Slam, just the four, or the Grand Slam Plus, which is the five of them.
Yeah.
And they have like, they're the bios of each runner. And then that hooked me, Sam. I was like, I want to be the first Mexican. When they look for the first Mexican doing the plus.
Yeah.
There was zero. Like, you can select there, the nationality, and nothing came up. And I was like,
oh, here we go.
All right. How cool would that be if my name was there saying Tanya was the first Mexican achieving
one of the biggest
Grand Slam
in the world,
plus. Oh, my God. So that was... That's why I'm doing this. So.
And we're very excited to meet you and to take on that position, that accolade of being the first Mexican to do the Grand Slam Plus.
Absolutely. So obviously, like we said, it's five races. Have you been to all of them, or you are just concentrating in Namibia?
No, I've been to all of these races. And when we have a Roving race, I've been to most of those, and I will be in Jordan this year at that Roving race.
Awesome.
I've been to them all, and I've been to most of the Namib race ones as well. So I can, yes. Now's your opportunity. Ask me what you want to know.
I was going to say, so that's it. I have my list. Yeah, hold on
a
minute.
I hope you've got time because you've got a big list here.
Which one is your favorite, would you say?
Or
what do you think are different each one?
That's a really difficult question. And I'll ask you the same question after you've done the five.
That's a good answer.
Because they all have them. My immediate go-to is the Atacama Crossing. Like, I love San Pedro de Atacama. I love Chile. We've been there on nearly the same course for more than 15 years. And it's like going home. Like, when I arrive, it's a small town, and there's people who will see you in the street and be like, Sam, or Racing the Planet. And so it's like that side of it is very exciting. But the culture in Mongolia is something that you don't see very often these days. So that's also very unique. I mean, you've got nomad families you're running past who very rarely see Western people. So their excitement and the kids sort of riding past on their horses, it's a different way. And then Antarctica is amazing. I mean, Antarctica is like no other place on the planet. It's a very difficult question to answer that. But Namib, you've got the dunes, and they are the iconic dunes that when you think of a desert and you see these dunes, this is what you think of.
Yeah. Would you think Namib will be the hottest one
It will be interesting to see the weather these days in the World Cup. That's probably our biggest challenge, to be honest, is you can't predict the weather anymore, whether it's like the heat or the cold or the rain or the sandstorms or the whatever. Yeah. 10 years ago, you had a pretty good idea and it sort of stuck to it. Yeah. These days, you just don't know. Namib can be very hot. And the last edition that we had was very hot. We had an east wind, so it's particularly hot, but we made some changes during the race to make sure that people weren't running in the hottest part of the day or were forced to rest, etc. Jordan being held in September could be very hot. I expect in the 30s, high 30s or early 40s for
all of them.
Really, apart from Antarctica.
I love when you were saying that you experience the culture, and I think that is one of the things that I am looking more forward, because obviously, well, I don't know if you know, but I'm more into one stage running, right? And the 20 plus ultra marathons I've done have been in one stage. So, you know, 50 miles, 100 miles just in one day. So there's, you know, in the mountains or just out in the trails, I don't see, or other runners, I don't experience that, you know, I run pretty much alone all the time. Like
some cows and some
hours,
sheep, possibly.
Probably. Those are my friends. But that's it, you know, and you don't see that, or you don't see a lot of people. I've done them here in the UK. It's pretty, you know, lonely. You don't, which I love it. It's part, you know, I like that as well. Yeah. But one thing that I'm looking forward to is like what you mentioned, the culture, like, you know, people coming out from their houses and just saying, waving or just cheering on you.
I think when I was reading about it, Sam, it's one of the things to me that really struck it as being special in comparison to other races. And I know that there are other ones, but I think that it's one thing that you've really got behind, you're really excited about, you know, you can see those.
And they have the hashtag actually very good on there. It says more than a race. So I'm starting to understand why it's more than a race, apart from, you know, obviously the kit and all the logistics, it is definitely more than a race. The experience of, like you just mentioned right now, I think it's just kind of like, it's not that I wasn't aware, but you just, like right now you remind me, I didn't know like the people would be so close, like they will actually see you and then you will see them. And that will be really, 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 really fun to experience.
Yeah, so the company was actually founded by my boss, Mary Gaddams, who's very involved in the races. And her ethos was two things. One is to take people back to basics, to remember what life was like without like internet 24/7, without showers whenever you want, without that comfortable bed, with all those things we take for granted, was to take people back to basics, to appreciate what we have.
Yes.
And the second thing was to experience the cultures in some of these countries before they disappear, which in the next, I don't know, I want to say 100 plus years, but in some places it'll be less than that. All cultures are amalgamating, which has its positives, but they lose some of their traditional living side of things. Right. So it's to experience that and to try and encourage that side of things as well. So the race is a race, and the fast people are very fast.
Yeah.
but after the top 10, it's very much about the experience, the ethos, the culture, the camaraderie. More than a race.
Yeah, that's fantastic, isn't it? I love that.
I know, I'm so excited. Yeah, I will not be in the top 10. I'm just going to say it now.
It's more fun outside the top 10.
Right?
Sometimes the people at the back,
I just want to enjoy.
That's where the party happens.
Yeah,
totally.
Would you call it the back of the pack runners have the best fun?
We have the best fun. I just want to work on my tan. So I want to spend a little bit more time out there. So from obviously all these years that you've done the races, and you've done them all, do you think you can tell us like an inspirational story, something that, you know, obviously you probably know a lot, but something, the first one that comes to your mind, is to, I don't know, inspire us all a little bit, including me.
I mean, that could be an entire podcast series on its own, because everybody
right?
comes to the race has some form of story or other, whether it's to run fast and to achieve that, or to raise money for charity, or they're blind, or people who've had one leg, or, you know, there's all sorts of different, they've been through cancer or they're going through cancer. I mean, the stories of people at the races, everybody has some sort of a story. But certain ones that come to mind when I share, one is from, which always sticks in my mind, from 2009, so a long, long time ago. And it was the Long March and the overnight checkpoint, and one of the racers had come in and he was tired and he was hot and he was like he threw off his bib at the checkpoint team and said, I'm done. That's it. I'm not going on. This is ridiculous. This is so hot. This is so hard. Like, I can't. And the checkpoint staff were, I mean, he was fine. He was just tired and very nice. And he said, I'm afraid you need to wait here until the last person arrives, which is what we generally do if people withdraw without any requirement for any external help. So he waited there and he was going to have a long time. So he fell asleep and I woke up a few hours later, and then a blind guy came in with his guide, and he was tired, but he sat down and he dealt with his blisters on his own, mainly on his own, or like feeling around and getting his water bottles filled. And this guy that had come in there and kind of quit very dramatically, sort of quietly went to the bin, picked out his bib, and said to the checkpoint team, I'm carrying on, and off he went. So it's not so much inspiring as such, but how other people inspire those.
I was gonna say, do you know you have that blinds as well? And like, it's almost like, what is your excuse for not trying something like this, isn't it? It's like I think everyone should try it at least once.
I think it's something you find a lot in the community anyway, in ultra runners, and especially by the sounds of it, this race, that people really do support each other, you know, and they really sort of help each other through tough times, because sure as God, it definitely happens in these races. And just that one person to say the right thing to you at the right time, or for you to pick up something, makes a world of difference to your journey, doesn't it?
You probably guys. You know, you should know better than anyone that encouragement in that moment, you know, like what the guys probably did with the guy throw the babe number and everything. They're so understanding, isn't it? Because you're like, yeah, sure, she's just tired or whatever. So with this story, what do you think is the main reason for DNFing? Because I am quite scared of this.
so to start with, the number of people who withdraw from each race is normally 10 to 20%. So our races are 100 to 150 people. So you're talking about 10 to 20 people per race. So it's not that high, considering the terrain and what they're going through. And I think partly that's because it scares them. So people prepare a little bit. Most people prepare a little bit. And also the cutoff times are quite generous. So the fast people are very fast. The middle pack are competitive among themselves. And it's possible to walk the entire course and still finish. Some people plan that from the start or if you need to. So it's quite a low withdrawal rate. But I would say probably the biggest reasons people withdraw, blisters is the first thing, which seems crazy because it's so, it sort of seems like such a little thing. But once you've had a blister and you get it on day one and you don't deal with
it, it's so painful.
Day after day. Second thing is probably the heat and how people manage it. So it will be hot. I mean, I imagine you'll be fine. I think you like the heat in general, but
I do still like the heat in general, but I think that is going to be very hot.
It's a reminder just to, you have a plan in place and you stick to it. So eating, drinking, electrolytes. And when it's very hot and you get behind, it's hard to catch up. And then you've got to do it again and again and again. And actually the same with the blisters. You know, you get a blister, you can deal with it. But if it's day one and then you have to start again the next day when it's relaxed and put it into your, you know, it's that's what... that's what I think takes the toll a bit more on people.
Yeah.
And the third reason, honestly, I think as much as we tell people and people may read it and think they're ready, I think some people just aren't either physically or mentally prepared. And sometimes it's the mental side. If they've got things going on at home or at work or whatever, and they're not fully into it, when things get tough, they're just like, well, actually, maybe I should just go home, or maybe this isn't for me. So I would say those are the three main reasons that people don't finish.
Definitely. Okay. So I will work in my mental toolkit.
I think on that side, you're going to be all right. Having listened to your other podcast and tell me your preparation, I think you've got that part.
Although, Sam, we did have a case of heat stroke in the south of England.
We did. I'm a little scared.
So I think that is what makes you nervous, is because it's happened to you before.
You know what? I think I wasn't expecting. And in this one, at least I'm expecting it. I'm ready for it. Or the 100 miler was really, was one of the hottest days here in the UK.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was expecting it already. So now, because that happened to me, now I'm scared of it. And now I'm like super prepared all the time for just in case. So
Is there such a thing as an electrolyte suit? Can we get you one of them?
An
electrolyte suit?
Suit, so you can put it on
and just run in it. You'll be fine. You'll be good.
Oh, God. And how important is it?
You can't. you can't take too many, or they don't think you can take too many electrolytes to be to make to have a yeah. problem, but they won't make yeah. you
but you do
well. So there is a balance on
yeah, yeah, exactly.
But it's little, it's things like putting sunscreen on and reapplying sunscreen yeah. And it's wearing your cap and it's, you know, staying in the shade for 5 minutes. I'm not happy that you've experienced it, but having experienced it, you'll know the symptoms and you're less likely to let that happen
yeah.
again. Definitely. And it is about managing yourself throughout.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I'll have 5 deserts to practice. So
you'll just put it right before you go to Antarctica.
Oh, yeah. That one doesn't count. You're right. So 4. But what about the cold? Cold can be tricky as well.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a little bit more used to because I've been in the UK and I've dealt with cold races. But still, they are tricky as well. And you have to respect cold. Is there a lot of DNFs in that one just because of the cold? I wouldn't imagine.
No, very few DNFs in that one. It's a slightly different format on the race where it's based on time rather than distance.
All right, okay.
And you do sleep on the ship. So you do have a chance to, after each stage, to warm up, have a shower even, have something to eat. But don't be fooled by that, because the problem people have going into that is they think, oh, great, I'm going to be in a ship and in a warm place afterwards. Yeah. But mentally, it's a lot harder and the terrain in some of it is very tough. So don't be fooled by that. But in terms of DNFs, generally not, because they keep going for the time. The distance and the speed doesn't matter. And then they do get to warm up at the end.
It's interesting that we had Al Baron, who is Tanya's nutritionist, last week, and he was really good because he was telling us about how nutrition actually needs to change for different races as well. So your nutrition, he concentrates on the hot races, and then when it comes to Antarctica, it will be a completely set of different nutrition, because what happens is the way that you lose water and salt in your body. So
maybe
he's going to have
he's
going to have to completely think about it differently.
I think in Antarctica, they are quite specific in things that you couldn't take. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sam. So it will be quite, they will almost give us like what is possible and what not, just because it's such a protected area.
Yeah.
So each one
That's exactly right. So it's another challenge to add to it, but it's only for during the stage. Although some of the stages can be 15 hours or longer. So you need to have the food, but yes, they're very strict during that, the actual stage. Food that you can take on shore, very strict.
Yeah. Right.
Can I ask a quick question?
No,
this is just one I was just thinking when you were saying that. When you are planning and organising the races, how do you come to determine, for example, what sort of things it is for Antarctica that they should take?
Oh, it depends on the permits, I guess. It's just a very protected area. Well, I'll let her speak. But.
Yeah, so in terms of, you mean in terms of equipment, food?
Yeah, in terms of equipment and food, equipment. And how do you come to those decisions?
So we start off with what we know that you would need. And honestly, so the first race in Antarctica was held in 2003. And the kit list then, I think, was probably longer, marginally longer, and quite different to what it is now, because we learned quite a lot from that. From having been to the first one, we went a little overboard on extra cold layers and cold layers and cold layers. And now we've sort of narrowed it down to exactly what people need that is required for that. So it's from Experil. It's from initially research and knowledge, and the expedition guides that we work with in Antarctica is specific for Antarctica region. And then since then, we've refined it based on what we found out. So things like how many pairs of socks to take, and the fact that you do have to have glacier goggles as well as ski goggles, because they mist up at some times, and then some are better for the sun. And when it's sunny down there, the sun is so strong. And things like temporary blindness from the sun getting into your eyes is quite common in general, people going to Antarctica. So we've sort of revised it. And we always ask people's opinions afterwards. And I think we've got to the point now where people who've done the race use almost all of the equipment that they take there.
And that will happen with every race, I would imagine.
Same in every race, Yeah,
but I think that's really good, because that actually shows how much work goes in behind the scenes to get these things right, you know. And I think for people who are listening to the podcast that are not runners or maybe not into that sort of run, it just shows you how much actually physically goes in and the what you need to go through and who you need to talk with and the kit you bring. It's really interesting.
But it was also interesting, Sam, that you were saying that, let's say, the middle of the pack, and also there's the walkers, right? Like, maybe they will take a little bit longer, but they will finish it. Like, you can finish it just walking. And that's what I was saying in my previous podcast that you probably heard about, that I think if someone would ask me as a coach, or said, you know, someone just asked me like, hey, I want to start doing ultras or doing something, you know, epic or a challenge, I would think a stage race is a fantastic way to start. I don't know if you agree, like if you would throw a newbie into it. But I think it's, you know, like you said, with the proper training and the proper mental, you know, strength, I think it's pretty doable for anyone. And I would really encourage anyone to, you know, if it's in their possibilities, to go and, you know, check the Race in the Planet or check any of the races that you guys do, because I think they are absolutely fantastic, apart from the places that where they are. But the organization is absolutely brilliant. Like, so far, you know.
I was going to say, we'll talk again after your first race. It's an interesting concept, that, because I tend to agree with you. Yeah. And so I always say to people, if you want to, you can. You don't need to do a half marathon or a marathon or another stage race or a double, like a two-day stage race, whatever, beforehand. If you want to, you can. But it's getting people over that, I want to or I can, to get them there. But once you're there, if you're comfortable with carrying your own equipment and going to quite difficult terrains and climates, then you definitely get a better feel, and the stress on having to run fast is not there for a first timer.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, it's more the challenge of the unknown, isn't it? That they're not quite sure what it's going to look like and what that'll be and what those challenges will bring to them, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's a fear, I feel like. People are, you know, I struggle with encouraging people to test, you know, something really difficult. So maybe one stage, you know, saying to someone, hey, run 50K in one day, maybe a little bit more daunting than, hey, what about breaking the distance in a couple of days? Plus, travel, plus experience it in a different country. Yes, it's going to be hard, but you know what? I feel like it's a little bit more.
And I think that's the exciting thing for this podcast that we're doing about the pre deserts, the deserts themselves, and then the post deserts.
I'm saying all this, but at the end,
But the thing is that this will show people that it can be done as well. You know that what that will look like and the organisation that goes into it, as well as what you get out of it. Which again is, I think, is probably more important.
Yeah. One reason why I'm doing one recording and documenting everything for myself, because I want to turn back and, you know, look at it maybe when I'm like super old and be like, hey, look, remember when I did this? And two is for that, to show people that it's able to do it. And I'm not a gifted athlete. I'm not an elite runner. I'm not. You know, I've been just building it with a little bit of consistency, but I'm not, you know, I don't have any special, and hopefully we'll be able to tackle the five of them in one go, in one year.
And it's absolutely right. You're definitely not the average person though, Tanya, I would say. You might not be a super runner, but you're definitely,
maybe mentally there's something wrong in there.
But I can justify to that.
Yeah. Actually, Andy, I was more concerned about talking to you on this podcast as the voice of reason.
Oh, no, I'm happy for it to go and do it.
Yeah, if someone's going to stop me, it will be the other. Do you think that happens a lot? No, isn't it? Like, you want to do it and the other partner is like scared, like, don't do that. Like, what if something happens to you? Or, you know, the other person can definitely hold you back a little bit.
Definitely the first time it can be a challenge. And I always say, well, I'll leave you to it until you've got the green light. Don't involve me in that.
Exactly. In that conversation. Yeah.
But there are things that people do with their families. So they can do the friends and family where they come and experience it once.
Oh, yeah. We're seeing the Mexicans. Mexicans are coming.
Or they can come and volunteer, or they meet them at the finish line and then go after that. Although I think was it your podcast? You were saying that you're always in a bit of a state at the finish line.
Yes.
Depends what race. Depends what race. In the other stage race that I did, which it was not as difficult. Well, you know, it was not self-sufficient. It was, I was fine. Like, yeah, that was absolutely grand. But usually in my races of one stage, so nonstop, I do. I mean, there are long days out there. Yeah. Like, the last one was 31 hours.
But even at that, I think finishing something like with 100 mailers, when you finish this race, it's that release of emotion. I think I talked about it before, because everything you've trained for, everything you've done to get to that point, and you complete it, it is quite an emotional thing, I think.
Like, the last one, I didn't feel that challenge. That's why I was like, oh, maybe I should jump into, you know, add a little bit of difficulty, which is the self-sufficient, because I think that's going to add a lot of spiciness into this, carrying your own stuff. Yeah. I mean, an average, what do you reckon the backpack should be? I know, you know, it depends, but
try not to make it above 10 kilos, about 22 pounds before water. If you can keep it to 10 kilos with water, that being, you'll be carrying at the start of a checkpoint 1.5 liters. So that means your backpack should be at the start of the race, and what's that, 8.5 kilos, and then add the water onto it.
It's been really interesting, actually. Funny you say that, because we've been talking to another couple of people that have done things similar, and they've given such simple but brilliant tips. So, for example, with a toothbrush, cut the end off it and just have the brush itself. And all those wee things going into your backpack will make a difference. I remember when you were speaking about that, I was thinking, I can't believe I never thought of that.
I think every gram counts at the end of the story. So yeah, I haven't packed yet, but I'm looking forward to doing my first pack. And I'm sure that will change through every desert. You know, I feel like you're going to start getting better and better in each one.
Yeah.
So the first
So one of the racers who will be in the mid race, who didn't finish the first race that he did with us, and his pack was heavy and he wasn't prepared, has done two more since then. And if you read his blog, his name's Richard Berenger, he has lots of good tips on there. And he had one of the lightest pack in the last race he did, which was the Atacama in September last year. And it certainly wasn't like that a year before when he started his journey. Yeah,
you see, so you learn a lot. Love that.
Yeah.
I love, apart from learning from yourself, you're learning like those skills, you know, like... Yeah. So you need to solve with the least things that you can bring. Like, just solve whatever, because that is going to happen, and you can't bring.
And that's one of the things you love about the whole ultra running and races like this. It's the problem solving, isn't it? It's how you get over this next hurdle, you know?
Yeah, mentally, and obviously now we're going to add the self-sufficient thing, which I think I'm not too fussed. Like, I don't mind...
Good for me, because I don't need to crew you.
Oh, yeah. I'm just liking that. But Sam wants to ask you that you need to go and crew for one of them.
Yes, I will. I will.
100%. I was going to ask you that question. I was surprised you hadn't already asked about it, because it sounds, you're always so supportive of what Tanya does from the podcast I've been listening to. But also, I appreciate there's a lot going on that needs to be covered while she's running through the desert.
I think on the first one was going to be a bit tricky, going to Dubai. But yes, I definitely will. When I crew Tanya and some of the other races, I kind of voluntarily volunteered, don't I? So I help the guys out at the checkpoints whenever I can. But yeah, I'll definitely do one. And I'm actually be quite excited.
He's really good
at
refilling the water bottles.
Yep, I have it all down. I'm timed. I'm like, it's like a Formula One car, you know, trying to get in and out the checkpoints.
Yeah, there you go. So you're going to have an awesome crew staff, maybe for China, we're thinking.
Yeah, that's
just because right now we're just moving to Dubai and then we don't have anyone to watch the dog. Because right when we move... So right when we moved to Dubai, 2 weeks after, it's Namibia, and I don't think in 2 weeks we'll be able to find, you know, a pet sitter and just figure out all the logistics for that. So he's gonna have to stay, and that's why my parents decided to. So they take turns and like, just they don't want me to just go. They don't want me to cross the finish line and not have someone. I feel like my parents are always very. very vigilant on me having someone at the end all the time.
So. And your mum's training for the last 10K as well.
Oh my God, did you hear that story from the last podcast, Sam? That was so funny. My mum is like, you said they're training more because she's scared.
Yeah.
She's scared.
So it's an indirect impact.
I know.
I shouldn't say this on this because she'll probably listen to it, but she can change her mind once she's there.
Oh, I did ask that on the email just to, but I didn't tell them. So let's just like not mention
that. She can't change her mind once she started the stage.
Oh, she can't. Oh my God.
I tell her she can't. Like once she's actually working, that's it. She's in.
We'll have that plan. We'll have that chat. Like, okay,
I was saying she'll probably cross the line before Tanya will.
Probably.
That's your challenge.
She is super strong. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe she gets like she like. I'm saying my mom because my dad is a little bit more fragile. But my mom is. My mom is like me. We're like tanks. Like we can take. So, I mean, I feel like women, and that's the other thing I was going to talk to you about, Sam, as well. It's great that women participation in stage races is almost 50-50. Do you guys have it as well in Racing the Planet?
No, we don't, unfortunately. Gone up another percentage, gone up and up and up. And we're now around 30% average, which is kind of disappointing. But I will say that the finish rate of the women that do the races is higher than the men.
Always.
With the math side of things, like there's less women doing it. So probably, but I think the women think about it more. And if they're going to do it, they're going to do it. And they get prepared and trained. But no, I mean, it used to be originally it was sort of closer to 10%. So it has gone up a lot. But
definitely more than a normal.
We would love for the day that a woman wins overall. We've been really close to it.
Oh, God, that would be. Oh, have you? Oh, my God, that would be amazing. Top 10,
not yet as a woman won it overall, but I think that time will come.
Absolutely, Sam. Not me, like just I'm not going to
already write you off, are we?
Definitely write me off on that, but I will be there cheering because I'm like, and trying to bring women into this sport as well. That's what I was saying, it's so difficult to talk to them into the, like, you know, leave the fear away. And if you want to do something epic, okay, maybe don't do the 50K in one go or the 80 if that's too scary, perhaps. Maybe walk. I mean, yes, I know it's in the desert. I know it's in the, but you know, you want to do something challenging. Yeah. So I think this is a great way to start.
I think it's a shame, but I don't know if you agree, Sam, but it just seems to be that ultra running, and even though this is a massive race, it doesn't get the exposure it should do. You know, I think that there's a lot more exposure on different things for things that are maybe not.
He's like, now that he obviously sees these races and you're like more involved into it, he's like, why this is not on TV? Like, they're so exciting, you know? Like, he's like, why there's like soccer, you know?
Well, that's a bit of a different thing.
But like, there's sports. Why there's golf tournaments on TV and why there's not these, you know, amazing people doing these amazing feats? Why there's not like a channel?
Just wondering what your thoughts are on that, actually.
Yeah, we fully agree. It's an interesting one because it's not a spectator sport day by day in terms of that you could have someone coming out for. Mind you, I agree with you. I'm not sure golf is either, but just like you want to see the highlights. There are some good films out, both of our races and similar types of races that are very good. And they do get little snippets of coverage when they're on. But I guess the ultimate thing is, and the part of the point behind it is there is no prize money, and therefore that gives less of an incentive for the people sponsoring who would be covering it on TV to make a big thing of it. Like, we have quite a lot of coverage in Japan and Korea, strangely, and Japanese quite often send out media crews to film for a documentary series on the races. Less so from other countries. It's sort of very piecemeal or individual. And it is a shame, I fully agree, because the highlights and the stories and that side of it really is very much more exciting than some of the sports that you...
I think if more people would see it, maybe they will feel more interested. And they'll be like, okay. I feel also that the media, or they put a lot of media out of the fast people in the front. And then obviously they are like, oh, I will never be as fast, or they are not as, you know, they are not elite runners, and they get spooked by it. But they should maybe put out a little bit more of the walkers, you know, the stories of that people, the back or the middle of the pack, or people normal, like, I know you said I'm not normal, but, you know, not like in that sense, they're not elite, so people can maybe relate a little bit more, and they'll be like, hey, so, you know, if she's doing it, maybe, you know, and I feel like it's a lot of attention into running fast and being fast, but, you know, I feel like even more stationary.
There is a great documentary that's due out quite soon. It was based on our race in Lapland 2022, and it was a British woman who was training a group of females to come to the race, and they were based all over England and the US and I think other places as well, but she was sort of bringing them together as a group to prepare them, so they're all running different times. One of them was very fast, most of them were sort of back of the middle of the pack kind of thing, and it's sort of their story going into it and then them racing, and it's about women and it's about normal women and it's about how they overcame their fear and then what they achieved. So there is good, there is, I wouldn't say good, there's really interesting coverage of the races, but not enough of it. I do agree with that.
I would agree.
Now we're sounding like trying to look on the internet, like
I used to be forced to watch running podcasts, and now she comes out our movies or whatever, and now she comes in and I'm sitting watching. She's like, oh, I feel a bit proud of you now.
It's like, we don't only just run. There's a little bit more involved. So Namib race, obviously, is the first one that we are going to be facing. And what would be your advice to me on this first one? It's my first self-supported stage race.
Well, the good thing is some of my advice, I've got 4 points here, you're already sort of on board with, and it's about sticking to it. So one is read all of the details and have a plan, set a plan accordingly, both with your training, your logistics, and then during your race. So have a plan, stick to the plan, and enjoy yourself. If you're enjoying yourself, then everything else will, if you're sticking to a plan and enjoying yourself, and everything else will fall into place. Like when things get tough, or when something doesn't go your way, or when something's not as you hoped it was, just remember why you're out there, where you are, who you're with, and stay focused on that side of it rather than whatever it was that went wrong, like your shoelace broke or you got a blister that you didn't fix. But there'll be people there to help you through that so you can get through. But stay positive and remember that you're there by choice and make the most of the enjoyment part of that.
You paid for this.
Yeah, I think that's good advice.
Definitely. And in the sense, I know you made a quick overview of the terrain and the route for the races, but for everyone that's watching this one didn't have the access or haven't watched the other, you know, the full episode on your podcast, on your YouTube channel, can you give us a rough outlook of how is Namibia looking? What should I be expecting?
Well, the summary is when you come back, you will never have thought that there was that many different types of sand. there is a lot of sand in Namibia. So there's soft sand, soft deep sand on the dunes. There's hard packed sand at a slight angle on the beaches. You've got some hard packed sand in areas where you can run through, in the bottom of riverbeds, for example. You've got sand that goes hard and soft in between. And then you've got sand with rocks in it as well. So there's a lot of sand. What other than that, so the sand, the heat, it's not very high. The elevation is low, so it doesn't, or the altitude is low the whole way. So from that side, it's a positive thing for side of the course for people racing. But the up and down, there's more up and down than you would expect. It sort of looks on an elevation chart like it's just a couple of blips, but it's a bit more up and down than you might expect. But I think ultimately, be ready for a lot of sand and be prepared for the heat and have a plan in place for the heat and stick to it.
Okay, perfect. Okay. So I'll bring my oil to take that tan.
The factor zero that you normally use.
So I'm gonna use every single time I'm out there to work on my tan.
I'm very glad to hear you've been listening to all of my advice.
No sunblock. Mexicans, we don't use sunblock.
But the scenery-wise, I think you'll be quite surprised by the scenery because hopefully you will see flamingos and ostriches sort of out there in the middle of nowhere. There's quite a lot of springbok and oryx around. But But when there's a lot of people around, they tend to sort of disappear and they're watching you rather than the other way around. Yeah. But you're going up, they have call it the mountain. And so there's actually quite a short, sharp, steep climb. And then it's rocky coming down. And then you go into the dunes and then you're crossing a railway, like an old railway line. So it's pretty interesting, the area there.
And actually, do you know, it's funny you're saying that, because that's something that we talked about after you came off the call that time that I was listening to. And it's maybe a good time to mention about the charity that you deal with out there as well, which is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, the run.
I absolutely love that when you were talking about the charity that you go and you deal with the local people.
Yeah, so we always try to give back in the countries we're in. So rather than making donations to the big charities, we try to support a local cause that is close to the race and related to the race, or try and get them involved.
Yeah.
So the one that we work with a lot in Namibia is called the Sandwich Tour, which sounds a bit strange, but it's a guy who grew up in the slums who's managed to get himself out of that. But he works in an Indian restaurant. He's not earning billions of dollars. And he has a project where he feeds the children from the area he came from. So we've sort of involved in that, both by donating towards it, but also encouraging racers to go on this kind of 3-hour tour where they get to go and see the area and actually get involved with the kids. So they help to prepare the lunch and give it out to the children when they're there. So they see the other side of Namibia as well. It's a beautiful country and it's a very safe country and it's very sparsely populated. But there is still a big divide, I guess, like in all countries, between the rich and the poor. And you sort of see another side of it there.
Yeah. Oh, such a cool thing to do, these races, you know, when you've got that, when you get involved at that level, because I don't know any other races, and I might be wrong, that do that, you know, that go in and give back to the people around in the area. It's such a fantastic idea.
That's what I was saying, like looking forward to meeting the culture. I think you have more time to experience the culture, and that's, I mean, we travel a lot. We love traveling. And that's what we like, traveling, because we want to experience culture. So I am looking forward to it. And
what I hope that you'll find in Namibia, so there's not so much culture in terms of the tribes, because we're not going through many of the areas where they are. There is one area we're on, hopefully they'll come out, the Topnars will be there around, but it's not like in Mongolia where you're running sort of past their tents, basically their houses, their moving houses. But the local team that we have are all from local tribes of some sort or another. So they've been paid to be there, but they're giving the hot water, they're putting up your tents, and they speak English and they want to talk, they want to to get involved. Yeah. So sort of
given that, you know, that interaction.
It's good, doesn't it?
Yeah. You wouldn't have that anywhere else. So in a normal one stage race, you don't have that. So I just think that is like so unique. I'm so excited. I'm looking forward to it. I hope I'm ready. We'll see.
I'm sure you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
I've been having issues with the visa, Sam, so that's been really fun and stressful, but we'll figure
it out.
Let's
talk about that more offline, because it can be a bit of stress, but most people have got theirs quite easily. So offline, and maybe we can help you with that.
Definitely.
Most people don't need a visa to get to Namibia, and actually something like this makes you appreciate when you have a passport when you don't need it.
Why Mexicans do we need a
visa?
I don't need a visa for a lot of countries. I don't need visas for a lot of countries. We travel, like I said, a fair bit. And this is the first time I think you require a visa. And I think I'm going to require for China, which I've been to China before, and I know I will require a visa, but it's quite fast and easy.
Unless you're flying through Beijing, so the Gobi's in Mongolia, and Mongolia has Mongolia, a visa-free agreement post-COVID to encourage people to come in. So hopefully you won't, but I will send you the details to be sure.
See, that was a good shout. Yep. It's like South Africa. I'm like, I don't need a visa because I'm going to Namibia. And the other ones were like, no, but you're crossing South Africa, so you need actually to. Yeah. Oh my God. I thought it was the same country. Yeah.
The one thing that we've really...
It more or less is, but...
Yeah. Well, it's not.
The one thing we've really learned is our geography is terrible.
So it was, it started from there. I was like, oh God, this is going to require a little bit more logistics than normal.
Luckily, all you need to do once you get there is follow the pink flags. Topography or navigation required.
Yeah.
I was going to ask that, actually. So everything is obviously marked. Do you guys send the GPS just in case or not at all?
No, we don't. And we don't because we don't want people going out and trialing it before. And we also don't because we make changes like even right up to the week before. So sending the GPS and then making sure everyone's got it and loaded it. We don't, but the flags are line of sight. So you will always see the next flag from the last one. And if you really can't, sometimes if the wind is blowing the wrong direction or the wind is blowing them down, then worst case, we say, wait where you are and we will be aware of it. And we will come and fix it for you or whoever the people are there. But flags are in line of sight. We have someone from the German army who's marking this course, managing and marking this course. So he's very efficient.
Oh, brilliant. Good. I love that. So far, like I said, we'll have a chat after. But so far it has been like you guys have been so, so supportive. So I'm always, like I said, trying to encourage people to try difficult things, do hard things. You can do hard things. So stage racing, I think, is a great option for going out there, have a great time outside in a safe environment. So far, Sam and all the team have been so supportive, sending emails, you know, with this is what you should be doing. This is the time that you should, you know, this is out of the forms that you should be submitting, you know, trying to like hold, you know, take us by the hand on every single step. Yep. So that makes it super, super easy and friendly. So if anyone's a little bit daunted by the thought of, oh, I need to do all this, like be aware or be know that Sam and all the team from Racing the Planet will be taking a really, really good care of you. And I am sure will be, everything will be excellent. And very, I mean, you guys have been doing this for 100%. A long time. And everyone that I've spoken to that have done the race, they speak really, really highly of you all. So I am really excited to meet you and to meet everyone and just start running. Because I'm like, at this point, after all the busy situation, moving to Dubai the 2 weeks before and all that, I'm like, I just want to run. I feel like the running part is going to be the easy part. And, you know, like all the stress was before. So I just want to be there and run and just like relax.
No, absolutely. We can't wait to meet in person. It's the people at the races that make the races, really. It's the attitude, the excitement, the camaraderie among the people.
And how many nationalities are you waiting, are you expecting in the first race? Because this is a very international race, by the way, guys. So this is so cool that I'm going to be meeting not only UK people, but a lot of people from how many countries?
So 44 countries represented at the moment. Yeah. Wow. So it's, and that's normal. There's always above 30, normally above 40. And then this one's bigger again. So no, really, it's very international. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the nationality or the age or the whatever. And so what someone else said, it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank when you're at a race, like everyone's equal. If you don't have a pack of ramen that someone else wants, then you know that, that's what's important.
And you all suffer the same, isn't it? Like you are all suffering the same. You are all doing the same course. Yeah. Like you said, it doesn't matter how much bank you have. It's not going to be easier because you have X or, you know, back home. That doesn't even matter. What matters there is how you're going to solve that problem in that moment.
Exactly. And, everyone's on an equal and everyone's there with the same ultimate goal.
Exactly.
Which is simply to get to the finish line with a smile.
Oh, I love
Hopefully.
That. It will be a couple of tears, I'm sure. Yeah. But I am so excited.
Tears. The photographer loves tears. He's from Brazil.
Give us some tears. I'll be just like faking the tear.
I know.
To get camera time.
Yeah, I know.
Excellent. Oh, thank you so much Sam, for just, you know, giving us a couple of minutes of your time.
Yep. In fact, see, before you go, Sam, I would love to ask you one more question.
Oh, no.
It's to settle the big argument that's been on the show since the beginning, and you may have heard it. Is it Namibia or Namibia?
So I heard that on an early podcast, and I was trying to work out if that's like the Scottish pronunciation or the... so it is Namibia. Uh-huh. But when you hear them saying it from the South African, like the South African or the African people saying it in English, it does sound somewhere between the two.
Does it?
But there is Gambia, which is Gambia. That's right. That's a completely different country.
Yeah.
Tanya's like, oh.
Well, do you know what?
I said that. Never done.
Well, I appreciate that. It sounds like you kind of half stuck up for me there. So I really do appreciate that. but I did do a bit of digging, didn't I? And I seen that it was to do with the Mandela effect. Apparently, that's how Donald Trump got it wrong.
I love the problem she was listening to the first podcast saying, but
what is this guy talking about?
These pair of nutcases, they don't even know where they're going. She doesn't even know where she's going to run.
I know. But thank you for settling that for us.
I guess myself, I haven't called it Namibia for years.
We were Googling it like for a couple of days to.
But you've made me feel half better. I appreciate you doing that. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much.
Tanya's the one that I need to make feel 100% confident. And
you guys made me feel so.
Okay, very good.
Definitely, you guys have made me feel so included as well, because you guys have calls as well. So you're like kind of meeting all the team. So yeah, definitely. I feel so excited. And we have a WhatsApp group also with everyone I don't think you are in it, but we're just chatting all, you know, behind your
back. You shouldn't be saying that.
That's perfect, because I'm sure they're answering. There's lots of experienced people doing the race as well as newbies. And I'm sure they're answering a lot of questions, saving those questions from me.
Very good.
Exactly. There is, now that you mention it, there's a lot of people that have done a lot of races. So it's good also to see people that are quite experienced, but also like newbies. That's the beauty of the race as well, I feel. So
get that mixture. Awesome. Generally in all races, and the same, Namibia has, I think it's 49%, 48% are doing the race for the first time. And that's a normal percentage for each race, because people go on and do different races. So normally in most races, there's half the people have done it before and have done one of our races before, a Race in the Planet race, not necessarily in Namibia. And half the people are doing it for the first time. So at the next race you go to, then you'll be one of the experienced people coming back and seeing the questions of the newbie. So it's quite a fun progression.
That speaks well about Racing the Plan, because that means that you're going to come back.
Yeah.
Even if you have your plan just to do going to come back for more. Excellent.
It's definitely addictive. And I think it's the people. I mean, it's the places and the experience, but it's the people that... camaraderie, that getting away for a week in the desert in that kind of environment.
It takes a while to readjust.
I mean, you know, you've done a similar thing, but it takes a while to readjust back to normal life.
Yeah. I remember when we're driving back from Jordan and the phones started pinging, because then we have, you know, signal again. Everyone was like, oh my God, I have 300 messages, and never, you know, get overwhelmed again. And then you stop chatting because... you're back to your phone.
Yeah.
When in the desert, there was nothing else to just...
Yeah, it'll be the same with this one as well.
Yeah, and then you connect much more, because then it's just you and the person there, and there's no internet, there's no, you know, so it's quite, I think, you definitely, the experience humbling. Of being away from... Yeah, humbling, definitely. That's the word. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Sam, again, for joining us today and giving us a little bit of your time and experience.
Yeah, your knowledge
course.
About it. Oh, it's been really interesting, hasn't it?
I'm so excited. Yeah. Can't wait.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. We can't wait to meet you. Five times in the next year.
You'll be sick of me. You'll be all sick of me.
I don't imagine that will be the case. But 7 weeks, and I'll see you in Swakopmund.
Yeah, and then you'll see Andy probably in China. He will get in touch to see where he can help you out.
Definitely.
But, that would be excellent. Count him in. That would be really,
I would love
really
to do good. That.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you so much.
See you
around.
Bye-bye.
See you soon. Bye-bye. Bye.
Well, that was pretty good, wasn't it? I thought that was excellent.
That was fun.
Yeah, do you know what it is? Every time I sit down into these conversations with people...
Oh, we can take this off,
and
right?
even though, for example, I know like Alba and Sarah, I feel like I learn something new and every time, you know, about what's going on. And there's some things that you just don't think about. That's why I'd ask the question about how do you decide about what should be taken to Antarctica or what should be taken to Namibia? there's a lot of thought goes into the background, a lot of trial and error as well, because I think for anybody doing it, you need to feel safe, and that is the important part.
I can imagine really as well safe. That they have to deal with permits from the areas. Yeah. I would imagine it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, it's not.
You
just
need to contact the people that are going to, where's going to be our checkpoints, to bring all the water to the desert in the middle, you know, like the logistics behind a race like this.
Yeah, there's a lot going on,
isn't there? I can't imagine. It's wild, probably.
It's pretty impressive, isn't
it? But it's going to be cool to see it and experience it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, running it. Yeah.
Do you have a question for you? Now that you've spoke to Sam, I mean, we've had quite a few guests on. We've had Sam, Alba, Sarah. Do you feel ready?
Yeah, I was going to say I feel more calm just now that I spoke to her. Yeah. The fact is that she's like, oh, you can walk. That just reassurance is like, all right, I'll be fine. I mean, I hope I'm not going to run all the time. But if I need to, I know I will be. That's my major. And I think in general, I've been reading quite a fair bit in why women don't sign up for these things or even for ultras. And I think I was reading something around 40 to 50% that they get spooked because of the checkpoints or the cutoffs, which it's my spook off as well sometimes. Like I need to read, you know, the cutoffs and all that. So knowing that this one is quite, you know, they're not too
harsh.
So that gives me a little bit more, like I said, reassurance. And then you can relax and really enjoy it because you're not like, oh my God, I need to hurry up, or oh my God, I'm you know, not going to make it. So that's really cool. So,
and I think that the more that we've got into the podcast and the more that we've spoken to different people and we've explained it, maybe a lot of people will listen to this podcast and maybe a lot won't, but do you know, if only a few people turn around and say, do you know what, I think I can do that and I can try it, then it's been all
just
worth
try it.
Especially with having people like Sam on it who explains it, you know, in that manner. It's
exactly. If they are professionals, we have all the professionals here that they are saying you can do it. So just give yourself a shot because I am sure you can do hard things if you really want to.
Yep.
Well, that was our episode for today. That went fast. And remember to subscribe, like, follow us. I'm still very far from my target for Run for Hope, the charity that I'm running for. The kids, they are running, they're still running, they're still looking to get some shoes, running shoes for these underprivileged kids that we're sending these funds to. And there's races that they want to sign up for as well. So I do really, 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 really appreciate your support. I think we are like very low in our donations. So please, if you can donate or share, if you cannot donate, just share it with that. I will be more than happy if anyone that is able to put a little bit there in donations.
And just one thing to add, welcome to our Apple podcast listeners and also there Amazon Prime listeners. Apple. Yep.
Yeah.
So that's a new avenue for us.
I know. That was
we can thank a producer for that, by the way, because he told us how to do it.
Thank you, Gavin. And oh yeah, by the way, if you can donate, or going back into the donation thing, also we have the gear merch from the Ultra Happy Podcast. 10% of that is going, which is pretty much all the profits are going to the charity as well. So if you just want to get a cool hoodie and also help the kids, that is doing, that's going as well. So well, thank you so much, guys. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and keep doing whatever makes you
ultra happy.
Ultra happy.